Author of the Week on Literary Lusts, brought to you by Radio Gorgeous.
Good morning, Ruth Dugdale. Welcome to Radio Gorgeous.
Thank you, Donna. I'm very happy to be here.
Tell me about Nowhere Girl.
It's a departure for me because it's set in Luxembourg and all of my other novels are set in Suffolk.
Mm-hmm.
And this is about a 17-year-old girl who gets kidnapped at the annual fair, which is called Schubefeuer, and it's a massive fair that Luxembourg has every year and has had for centuries. And she's an expat, and she goes missing, and the police don't take it very seriously because of her age.
And she's how old?
She's 17.
Mm-hmm.
I have another character who was a probation officer in England and has come to Luxembourg for a bit of a rest with a new partner. And when she finds Ellie's mum at the fair distressed, she takes matters into her own hands and tries to find Ellie.
Yes. And there are some complicating factors in that, one, she is a 17-year-old girl. So, and 17-year-old girls are sometimes want to go off on a wander.
Mm-hmm.
All is not perfect at home.
Yes.
Tell me about the mother's character.
Well, the mother's an interesting character because she's somebody who, in a previous life, was a nurse for Médecins Sans Frontières. So she was very important and good at what she did. And like a lot of women here in Luxembourg, she's now a trailing spouse. So she's probably depressed. She's certainly redundant. And she's overprotective. She's seen bad things happen. And that's made her anxious. And then her daughter is missing. And although she's being told, your daughter's 17, she'll come home, she'll be with her boyfriend, she doesn't believe that, not from the beginning. Of course, there are twists to come, but her reaction is very much she's very distressed, and she doesn't know how to deal with it. She doesn't know who to speak to.
Yes. And Kate, you know, the probation officer, former probation officer, is also trying to find her feet in Luxembourg, and her boyfriend, for whom she's moved there, so in a sense another trailing, you know, not yet spouse, but trailing partner, which obviously you and I both have experience of, as you have moved to Luxembourg yourself following your husband's job.
Yes.
And I am obviously not a native Londoner. Dragged by the hair by my husband, dragged across the sea. And that, it seems to me that that is one of the things, especially as, you know, for the mother's character, formerly very capable person,
mm-hmm.
And obviously Kate as well, a formerly very capable person, then finding yourself,
mm-hmm.
you know, because you don't know necessarily the rules of where you end up. So you're floundering somewhat in terms of feeling incompetent in daily life, as well as seeing yourself as almost stuck in the role of mothering.
Exactly. It was because I was also newly arrived here, I was really able to connect with that idea. I didn't particularly want to move abroad. I was very anxious about leaving my family and my networks. I'm no good at languages, so that's been a challenge. And I was able to put all of those feelings into Kate and mm-hmm. also into Bridget. But also I met a lot of women here who in previous lives had amazing careers. You know, they were kind of quite exceptional women. They weren't, they weren't kind of boring things. They were like biochemists and barristers. And suddenly they've got nothing to do but buy the bread and the milk each day. And so I was very interested in that. So I suppose I was writing those characters to connect with my own feelings, but also wanting to address what that does to your mental health.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And it's fair to the title Nowhere Girl, it refers to Ellie, who's, where is she? She's nowhere. But it's also referring to Kate and Bridget, because where are they? You know, that they don't, you know, who knows where Luxembourg is before they've even been here. It's that idea that you're nowhere you can identify. It's nowhere where you know the rules. So you might as well be lost.
Radio Gorgeous, created by women for women. RadioGorgeous.com.
Well, and there's some other girls in the book who also are nowhere girls.
Yes.
No one knows where they are. No one knows who they are. They are very much unseen. And I like that double stream, if you can explain that a bit as well.
Yes. Well, the way that I write my books is very much the way that I worked as a probation officer. I'm interested in the criminal's point of mind, if you like.
Mm-hmm.
So because this book is about a kidnapping, I was never going to write it about just the feelings of the victims.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted to think about why somebody would take a child and what the motivation would be. And I very quickly tapped into the area here in Luxembourg that there are a lot of people here without papers, illegal, a lot of refugees. And they're struggling. They're really struggling, and they can't get health care for their families. And the welfare system here isn't particularly robust. And so then I thought, well, if I'm going to write about refugees, who do I write about? And I met two different Algerian families, which is why Amina is Algerian. And so she's been trafficked to Luxembourg, and her story dovetails with that of Ellie. But for me, because it was an area I didn't really know much about, it was really important to get that voice right and the story right. So it's, I hope it's a really sympathetic portrayal of why somebody would choose the dangers of travelling to a new country and living illegally rather than remaining in their home. So yes, Amina is also a nowhere girl.
Mm-hmm. And there's some people who travel with her. There's a brother and a sister. And Amina's own story. I'm very much interested in hearing the real stories. We have a very black and white notion of what's going on in Syria. It's a much more complicated affair, which is why I think they're sort of not reporting it on the news, because they think, you know, it's just too complicated for us to, you know, delve into. And you don't go into it, you know, this is a thriller, it's about a kidnapping, etc. You don't go into it deeply, but I liked just a peek into and possible explanations and possible explorations of who and how people find themselves in these situations.
Yes.
What's going on, you know, how radicalization doesn't necessarily feel like radicalization from the inside, regardless of how it looks on the outside, you know?
Yes.
So I read somewhere, you know, living in Luxembourg, you're very close to the history of World War II, and that, you know, we seem to be, as ever, repeating many of the same mistakes. How is that experienced by you?
Yeah,
you know,
I mean,
now.
I think you're absolutely spot on to make that comparison, because that's very much what I felt. I mean, I've been probably visited every military museum within a 2-hour drive of Luxembourg, because I'm really interested in, particularly in the Battle of the Bulge. And so when I was visiting those museums, as Kate does in the book, she goes to Bastogne. But then, because I was researching for the book, I'd met this... Well, I had this meeting with a social worker, and I said to her, you know, I'm thinking about writing about Algerian refugees who are struggling, who can't get healthcare. Is that the reality in Luxembourg? And she said, Ruth, I have a family in the waiting room right now. And I was really fortunate to have access to the people I did. And one thing that, of course, you don't know what people are going to say when you meet them, but one woman who I met was telling me about living back at home in Tizi Ouzou and how her brother was going to the mosque. And because of the age he was approaching, which was sort of 16, how the elders were starting to radicalise him. And it was this decision where, in her case, it was her father who said, I'm not having a martyr for a son. I don't want my son to die for this. And so made the decision to move the family. And the power of that, of listening to how her feelings of getting away, and of course she has been back to visit, and the people she's left behind, the radicalisation for them, and the view they have of the West, which is different from her view, having lived here, that was really powerful for me. And she, you know, she, I mean, the thing was, I was totally relying on what these people were telling me. And I did sort of say, well, you know, I'd really like to visit. I'd like to do that for research. And she said, it's just not safe. Mm-hmm. There are people in these mountains and, you know, it's just not safe. Even, she said, even for me at the moment, I'm not going to go there. There was genuine fear and a genuine risk that was worth taking to get somewhere safer. So I really wanted to do that justice. But, you know, I said, there was like three different groups of people I was speaking with. And I said to them, you know, just, you really need to give me the colours and the flavours of the land you're talking about. Mm. Mm. And they showed me like their tapis de prayer and the Gallat stone and these, the combs, the little details that they, the objects they had were the keys into their story for me, mm-hmm. which is why Amina has those objects with her. And of course they haven't read the book, so when they get given their copies and they read it, I hope they feel I've done their story justice. Because one thing I would hate would be if people felt that I had portrayed refugees in a reductive or a patronising way. Mm-hmm. So it was a tricky one, but I really wanted to write that storyline.
Listen to us online, on your phone, download a podcast, or on your tablet. Radio Gorgeous, there for you.
Well, I like that you seem to have an attitude of being quite fearless in terms of approaching things, addressing things, you know, that find perhaps in a stereotypical way, you know, an English reserve would normally shy away from. Do you think that's attributable to your work as a probation officer?
I think the personality type that becomes a probation officer, or for that matter, a social worker, you can't shy away from things. You have to be prepared to hear anything. And be fairly unshockable. I mean, one thing I learnt really early on was that if people felt that I was shocked or disturbed by what they were telling me, they just stopped talking. So definitely that's really useful to have those skills as a writer, because when I meet people, I will ask the questions I want to ask, and whatever they're telling me, I'm going to listen to. I'm not going to be holding my hands over my ears. So that has been useful. And yeah, I have gone into territories where I'm aware there's controversy. I mean, I'm writing about a kidnapping in Luxembourg, and Luxembourg doesn't like to talk about the crime that happens here. There's very clearly an agenda about it. There's a very strong on PR, and so I'm aware that it's potentially controversial to write something like this. But I don't know how to be any other way. I suppose, you know, I'm never going to write a spy espionage comedy. You know, it's the stories that interest me and attract me. And yeah, I will go to places where people might feel unsettled, I suppose.
Well, and I think that's what makes a good thriller as well, is that, you know, partially that it's that we're uncomfortable.
Yes. Mm. And that's why people read crime books. To be out of their comfort zone, but it's still a book, and you know it's going to end.
Yeah.
I think, you know, that traditionally your readers of certainly this kind of crime, domestic noir, you know, rather than cosy crime, they're actually wanting to be unsettled a bit and challenged. That's what I've found with the readers who've sort of spoken to me, that they quite enjoy that.
Could you tell me, I believe that you were also a recipient of the Luke Bittmead Bursary.
Oh, I was. It changed my life, actually. I mean, Luke Bittmead was an author published by Legend Press, and Unfortunately, he suffered from depression and he committed suicide. And after that, his mother, who's a remarkable woman, said to Legend Press, "I want to set up this bursary in his name." And they run a competition every year, and the winner gets a publishing deal and an advance, and it's all funded by the Luke Bittmead Bursary. So for authors, I mean, who, it's so difficult to get published, as most people now know that, and it's really tough. And to have this award where you can enter your work and potentially get a publishing deal, it's amazing. And I was, at the point when I entered with my second novel, The Woman Before Me, and I'd had, you know, already 5 years of rejections and, you know, really didn't know what was going to happen with my writing career. Probably would have given up entirely if it wasn't for family. But anyway, I entered the Bittmead Bursary and I won. And as a result of that, my book was in print, and then they signed my The Sacrificial Man. They republished my first book, the James version, and I've just had Humber Boy B out with Legend as well. So, I mean, it's just transformed my life, my career. And I think without the Bittmead Bursary, I would be an unpublished author. So I'm immensely grateful to it. And I think it's just a fantastic initiative. Every time I meet an author who asks for tips, my top tip is enter the Luke Bittmead Bursary.
Excellent. Excellent. Ruth, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.
This has been a Radio Gorgeous production for RadioGorgeous.com. Get in contact with us. Contact us on info@RadioGorgeous.com. And to sign up for our shows to come once a week into your inbox. Who can think of anything better, darling?
Someday, way deep down in my heart, I know I've done the best I could. And that's why I know that one of these days, it won't be long, you'll come walking through that same. And I can imagine in my mind that these are the words that you'll be saying.
This has been a Radio Gorgeous production, produced and presented by Donna Freed, edited by Bree Forer.